Hear that? Up there in that tree?
Oh, yeah.
Tweet, tweet.
It's me and all my homies love Native Manu, and it's about to start.
Yeah, it is. This is me and all my homies love Native Manu. E te wikine, e te whanau, we are talking about the Ngutu Pare, the Right Bill. And here to talk with me, as always, about our precious Native Manu is my friend and extreme conservation enthusiast, Pete Honda. Welcome back, Pete.
Morena.
Yeah. Good to have you back, bro. So yeah, e te wikine, guys, we're talking about the Ngutu Pare or the Ngutu Parore, the rival. Pete, can you tell us about the classification of this Manu?
Yes, they are
endemic. An endemic plover. And we talked about this. It's spelled plover, but it's pronounced plover. It's the English language.
English language, so stupid.
They are threatened, and it says that they're nationally increasing, but because they got down to about 2,000 birds during the 1800s, because they were heavily hunted for stuffed bird collections.
Still bad.
And then they became protected in 1940, and they've increased to about 5,000 birds. But from what I've read, they seem to be in a slow decline now due to various threats that we'll get into a bit later.
Yeah, yeah. So even though got a nationally increasing kind of classification, they're still on a slow decline.
Yeah, and they're heavily threatened, really.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And we'll get into that soon. We couldn't find a lot of information this week on tangata whenua relationship to this manu, but Pete has found a beautiful whakatauki, which is e rerekau mai te awanui, mai te kahui maunga ki Tangaroa, ko au te awa, ko te awa, ko te awa, ko au. Oh, that's nice. What is that speaking to, Petey?
It says, the great river flows from the mountains to the sea. I am the river is me.
Oh,
so this is quite a famous whakatauki, and it talks about the importance of, you know, looking after our river systems, and that all life comes from the awa.
Yeah.
And the health and the vitality of the braided river systems, that's under threat, and this really impacts the habitat of this manu, the Ngutu Pare, and other precious manu like the kaki that share this habitat.
Yeah, yeah. A very, very precious ecosystem, and a beautiful whakatauki to speak to that, and remind us that everything, all our natural systems and are connected.
Yeah.
How would you describe this manu, Pete?
Small, plump plovers. They're about 20 to 21 centimetres long. They weigh 43 to 71 grams.
Yes.
They've got they're complex in describing them. Like grey head, grey back, grey top of the wings, white underbelly and breast.
Yep.
Grey around the eyes.
Yep.
But above the bill, there's this little white patch, and then that sort of sweeps over the eyes like these long, thin eyebrows.
Oh, cute. Got like eye makeup on.
Yeah. And then they've got this white band under the bill, and then a thinner black-grey band under that.
Yes.
And I reckon they look like plump little Anglican vicars. And it's like Dawn French, eh? And the Vicar Dibley.
Oh, what a freaking good show that is.
I know.
Is.
But you look at that show and you look at these little plovers and you think, aha, they're vibing the same thing.
I'm thinking reboot of the Vicar of Dibley, this time with the rival.
Yes.
The rival has played Dawn French's
character. Dawn can do the voiceovers.
Oh, that's actually perfect. Maybe we should pitch that to the BBC. Yes. But, yeah, it's got a long black beak.
Yes.
And it's the only bird in the world to have a beak that curves to a specific side. Is that right? Right,
yes. Laterally to the right.
Yes.
And this is kind of what made it that must-have collection bird
for, yes,
for the bird collectors. They wanted a stuffed bird with a bent beak.
Oh, God. Get over
yourself,
guys.
So, the big question, why does the bill bend to the right? And I mentioned to you I'd prefer it to bend to the left, but the manu are probably apolitical.
But then we did talk about it and we were like, well, if you look at a photo of the manu straight on, the bill is bending to the left,
yes,
for us. So
yes,
that is kind of the saving.
We'll hold on to that. So it's sort of believed the bent bill is an adaptation to hunting insect larvae on river stones.
Yes.
A bit crazy, but clever too.
Mm.
But my theory...
I love your theories, Pete.
Because I've read Darwin's books and stuff. I reckon way, way back, one male chick was born with a bent beak as a random mutation.
Mm.
And it found it could outcompete all the other males for food, and it became highly desirable as an alpha provider mate.
And so everyone was seeking out that
exactly,
one bird with the bent bill.
And then that, through the generations, that gene became the dominant gene for all of them.
You're so funny.
It feels like it makes sense to me.
Okay.
How else would it have a bent bill?
I actually can't think of anything
exactly
funny this morning. I'm way
exactly
too tired.
But anyway, very cute little
very
manu.
Very cute manu. And encourage you guys to look up a photo of the rigel and have a wee look, because it's a very special bird. And so you can also see the Vicar of Dibley collar as well.
Yes.
But yes, Pete, where do they live and what are they chomping down on? What are they eating?
Well, the migratory birds within Aotearoa.
Yes.
So the summer is spent in your favourite part of the world, the Braided River system.
Yeah, the shout out the Braided Rivers.
Of Te Wai Ponamu.
Yeah.
And then they breed in these rivers. And so key areas, Waimakariri, Waitaki, Mackenzie Basin, Rakaia, Upper Rangitata, and other areas.
Yes.
And here they feed on sort of mayfly and caddisfly larvae, aquatic insects, and small fish.
Yeah, it's special. It's cool to hear, because like these are rivers I grew up going to, especially the Rangitata, and in the Waitaki Mackenzie Basin, and of course the Rakaia Bridge as well, or the Rakaia. So yeah, it feels very special to talk about this bird today.
So they sort of have their little territories. They can be 1 hectare to 11 hectares.
Yeah, and are they quite like territorial of this?
Very territorial. For other Nutupari, but they're okay with other species nesting in their territories, like the kaki or the black-fronted tern, banded dotterel, pied stilt. As long as they don't get too close to the nest, then they get a bit aggressive.
Yeah, of course.
But in the winter, they migrate north.
And I didn't know this. This is new information to me.
Yeah.
So going up to Te Kapa Moana, the Firth of Thames.
Yep, Firth, Thames, Manukau Harbour, Kaipara Harbour and Tauranga.
Yep.
They feed, and then their diet changes slightly to marine-based sort of insects, mollusks and small fish.
And that's just because their habitat has changed?
Yeah, that's their feeding ground. So it's in those mudflat type areas with lots of good food in them. They can roost on large industrial buildings in South Auckland or at Auckland Airport runways. So they sort of adapt to, you know, what's going on around them.
What was the... It was a dotterel that was hanging out at Auckland Airport as well, eh?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, they're just... They've got a... You said they go party mode when they're up here, Pete.
Yeah, it's quite interesting because down south they're sort of pretty... on their own, protecting their territory, quite aggressive. But they get up north, maybe it's the warmer weather, but they flock together, they feed together and hang out together.
They do these kind of murmurations as well, where they're moving around in the sky.
And they called it, like, described it as flung scarves.
Wow.
Who thought of that? But
who's sorry, who's flinging scarves?
But if you think about it, if you have a scarf and you fling it in the air, it has that murmuration type pattern.
Okay.
But if you don't know what a murmuration is, just it's not a heart condition. Though you do get heart murmurs. But anyway, Google starling murmuration.
Yes.
And you'll see these incredible synchronized aerial dances.
Yeah, it is pretty special.
From hundreds to thousands of starlings flying in formation.
Mm.
And it's like a wonder of the natural world.
It really is.
Yeah,
it really is. And I used to see that lots on the Wellington waterfront. Lots of.
Yes.
Yeah, at night. It was really special. But yeah, that's so interesting how the behaviour changes when they get up here. They're like, okay, it's all time to hang out and party time, festive vibes. The night is young. Let's do some murmurations. Exactly. What's the human equivalent of a murmuration?
I'm trying to think of it. What's that sort of dance where everyone just goes nuts on the floor? A rave?
A rave.
Yeah, I reckon it's a rave.
And so in terms of breeding,
yes,
are they forming monogamous pairs?
Yes.
Yeah.
And they return to the same breeding spot
each
year.
That's actually pretty incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they breed December through to February. And it's interesting, the males sort of bulldoze these nests.
Yeah, cool.
With their plump wee chests.
So they just like rub their little chests.
Yeah, they just push their way into the stony sort of bed. They make a bit of a scrape and then they line it with these small stones. I think that's beautiful. But it's clever because it's like it all blends into the environment.
And the bird is also very camouflage to the river
and the
stones.
Eggs.
Yeah, and the eggs as well.
Eggs are sort of pale grey, small brown spots. So the birds, the nest, the eggs and the chicks, they all blend into the river stone environment as part of their kind of defence systems.
Absolutely, because we'll get into it soon, but they are preyed on by other native birds, so that's a helpful adaptation for them.
Yep.
But yeah, we've got some co-parenting going on with this bird, don't we, Pete? Which
they
is
do.
Good to hear.
It
God,
is good to
after
hear
last
after last week.
Week. The rival shot for the co-parenting arrangements.
Yep. And so they both incubate their eggs for 30 to 36 days, but I think the mum works a wee bit harder.
Of course. Of course she does.
Both feed the chicks until they fledge around 35 to 40 days, and then the chicks are pretty independent after that. And they breed after 2 years.
Wow.
And they can lay two clutches per season.
Yeah, I was reading about that. I'm like, if they're successful in their first.
If they're going hundies at the beginning of the season, they say, oh, we'll go again.
I love that. Run it back. It's so good. but anyway, getting into some threats. We've talked about some predation from some native birds. What are the native birds that are predating on the ryebill, Petey?
The kahu.
Your favourite bird.
Yes. Gulls and owls like the ruru.
Yeah.
And they're still a threat today, but that's just part of a naturally functioning ecosystem.
Absolutely.
So there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
That's nature.
Yeah.
And they develop those defence systems of being hard to see, and they've also got that broken wing diversion tactic to kind of pull them away from the nest and the chicks.
That's so
which
cool.
Which is cool.
And the dodderel also does that as well, eh?
Yeah,
so they pretend they have a broken wing and then they don't get preyed on?
Well, it takes the attention of the predator. They follow the injured bird thinking there's an easy meal.
Oh.
And so they take them way away from the nest and the chicks.
Yeah.
And then they fly off.
Oh, God, it's good.
Yeah.
I love that.
So that's cool. Post-colonial hunting was massive impact, but now they're protected. Mammalian predators, same old theme. You know, ferrets, stoats, weasels, hedgehogs, feral cats.
Just all those
problems.
All those big ones, yeah.
Flooding can be an issue if, you know, unexpected summer floods, they can wash away the nests.
Which has been a big problem on those braided river systems as well.
Yeah.
Because of the pressure of farmland on those braided river systems, and then they're not as, like, I don't know, they're not as big as they once were, you know?
Yeah, and loss of habitat's a biggie.
Yeah.
You know, we'll dam the rivers, put in irrigation systems. We've introduced invasive weed plants that are a problem.
Yeah.
And, you know, the four-wheel drive vehicles.
If any four-wheel drivers are listening to this program, I can't really imagine that anybody is. Please do not drive your four-wheel drive vehicle in the
braided river system.
In the braided river system. Yeah. Like, just, there's no need for it, actually.
Not at all.
No, because it's such a precious environment, and it's actually something we could really easily stop doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's plenty of other off-road options.
Yeah.
Yes. And in the north, mangrove encroachment on feeding grounds is a bit of a problem because that's, again, people-induced kind of sediment coming down the river systems from forestry clearance, farming and development. And that's a particular issue at Pūkorokoro, Firth of Thames.
Yes.
Needs a bit of management to hold the, you know,
of course,
cut back the mangroves because otherwise they encroach on those critical feeding grounds.
Exactly, yeah. And then that affects the quality of the food that the birds can have and all that. Yeah.
So, yeah, these little manu, they're under the pump. They've got lots of challenges. We need to protect the river systems and deal with the predators and tackle weeds.
Yeah.
Just, you know, this is we've got to do this for all the manu, but this one's particularly challenged in those areas.
Yeah, definitely. And, like, this is a real special bird because it's the only one in the world with this, like, bent beak.
Exactly.
And I know that may seem, like, very small to some people, but, like, we have that bird right here in Aotearoa, and we need to do all we can to preserve it. And it's interesting, because at home in the Mackenzie Basin, there's been a lot of development of the hydroelectric schemes.
Yeah.
And that's obviously done a lot to divert the natural flows of the rivers. And it's it's interesting how this one thing can be, having hydroelectric power is good in some ways, but then also has disrupted a lot of the habitat of our native manu. So, I think it's just important to remember that, I don't know, there's pros and cons to everything, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
But we've probably done enough hydro dams in that system.
let's
not do any more.
Let's stop with the hydro dams, guys.
And let's kind of really look at the irrigation systems. Do we really need them? Are they appropriate areas to do farming?
Exactly.
If naturally they're kind of dry areas.
Especially in the Mackenzie Basin.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, let's protect the ribald, guys, is what we're trying to say this morning. Thanks, Pete. I've always really loved talking to you about our manu. But you've got a song for us to play to sound us out.
Yeah, for a song by Jen Kohler?
Kloher.
Oh, Kloher.
Yep.
Australian singer, but she's got whakapapa to Ngā Puhi and Ngāti Kahu on her mother's side, so that makes her a Kiwi. And the song is I Am the River Is Me.
Yeah, fitting song for today's kōrero. Yeah. Thanks, Pete.
Kia ora. Of everything.
Isn't that beautiful?
That was Me and All My Homies Love Native Manu, only on 95 BFM.